Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from The Grave Talks. If you're liking this program, I invite you to become a grave keeper. That is a supporter of this program. You are the folks who will financially allow this show to continue going forward. $5 a month gets you access to advanced episodes of the show as I create them. Typically 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, sometimes even more episodes in advance available exclusively for our grave keeper members. Plus, exclusive interview segments that are not going to be available to the public, only to gravekeepers. Typically an extra 10, 15, 20 minutes of interview time with future guests of our show going forward. It's exclusive content, it's advanced content, and it's only for gravekeepers who are helping to keep the show on the air. It takes a tremendous amount of time every single week for me to put this show together, get it up, get it on the air, have it hosted, bandwidth, all of that. And I love doing it, but we do need to make sure it's financially viable, in at least to support the costs of running this thing. So if you like the show, please consider becoming a gravekeeper through our website, thegravetalks.com or patreon.com/thegravetalks. $5 a month, get advanced access and exclusive content as well to keep this show on the air. Thank you for your support. I hope you enjoy it just as much as I do. Check it out, thegravetalks.com or patreon.com/thegravetalks. And thank you for your support. Today on The Grave Talks, the Bill Bean story. A life filled with drugs, addiction, poor choices, and lack of direction. This is where Bill Bean came from. Through his childhood, Bill experienced dark forces that took over his family. Abuse, violence, and emotional trauma were the norms through most of his formative years. Why was it that dark energy and negative forces would take over family members? What did they want, and who were they going after? In today's episode of The Grave Talks, Bill reveals to us the mysterious questions surrounding the setting of his childhood home and what his house may have been built on or around. Could something as simple as location be the reason for oppressive spirits to lash out at his family? And how did Bill turn his trauma into a positive force as a way to help others in his adult years? Today, we hear the harrowing story of Bill Bean.
My life was so bad for so long, for so many years, Tony. It's miraculous, and it's just unfathomable. You know, when I step outside of myself and look at it, it's almost like it happened to somebody else. That's how far removed from all that I am. But that said, you know, I grew up in a very, very harsh environment, to say the least. And my family was destroyed by demonic forces, and I was nearly destroyed as well. And these events, I've written four books. I'm working on the fifth book now. And in the first book, which is called Dark Force, I talk about these events that took place in 1970 in a house located in Glenburnie, Maryland, in a community called Herondale. And this house just had hellish things taking place, but it really wasn't until I finished writing the book that I found out additional information that it just wasn't entities that were, you know, part of the house in the area. Someone in my family many, many, many years ago, decades ago, had actually conjured up these demonic forces. I was not aware of. A family member told me this. And so I truly believe that by those demons being conjured up in that way, they certainly came in on and around the family. I feel that we were led to that house where evil was already present and manifest in the home and in the area as well. And that's why it was so severe for my family and I. We were caught in the middle of that perfect storm. And it greatly contributed to the destruction of my family. Neither of my parents lived to see the age of 50, and many other family members died mysteriously and tragically as well. And I very easily could have been, one of those casualties, but God had a plan for my life. And I feel, you know, in retrospect, looking back on this, that I could not be where I'm at right now had I not been there. So I feel that God had a plan for me before I even came into this world, and I think that the devil was certainly trying to stop that. So,
what were some of the things that were going on in the house that you began to attribute, or your family began to attribute, to being more than just hardship, more than just, you know, things in life that happen that are negative? What was kind of the tipping point there? What were some of those things that led up to, and what was that tipping point?
Well, the house was located at the bottom of a downhill cul-de-sac, and it had a very large and deep ravine behind it that stretched for a couple of miles. And there is, it was rumored that there's a spot down in there, and I'll tell you, it was a very eerie place, to say the least. One particular spot in the area in that ravine was rumored to be an Indian burial ground, and I could certainly believe that. And then if you go a little further down in the ravine, it would curve past a creek, Marley Creek, and down to a place called the Wishing Rock. And this is a gigantic boulder-like structure that's located in the middle of the woods, and it just seemed to be placed there. And a friend of mine, John D. Romine, is a retired police officer. He was a police officer in the area during the 70s. And he had written a book talking about bizarre events that had taken place in his career, during his career as a police officer. And my house and the area were one of those things, one of the things that he had investigated and written about. But anyway, this Wishing Rock structure was another. And according to his research, the Native American tribes apparently used to gather and worship and have treaties and things of that nature at this Wishing Rock structure, saying that it had these supernatural powers. And if there's anything to this at all, Tony, perhaps that was a gateway or a vortex or something for these entities to come through. And I had also found out after the A Haunting series featured my story, and then I'd written the book Dark Force, I'd found out that many other people in the area were also experiencing paranormal, supernatural, demonic problems in their homes as well. And I have been back as a deliverance minister, spiritual warrior, several times now on behalf of some of those people. But, you know, the house, let's get back to the house. The house from the beginning was semi-dilapidated. It had a very ominous look and feel about it. I was 4 years old when we moved there. My sister was 13. My brother was one. I just had this horrible feeling from the first time that I saw it. My sister was standing beside me. She said she felt the same way. And it was just a feeling of dread. It was awful. And my dad, William Bean Sr., was a master carpenter. He saw this as a restoration project, which he did quite a bit of work to it in restoring it. My mother, Patricia Bean, was a homemaker, and she was the first to have an experience in the house. It was shortly after we moved in. Now, let me give you a layout of the house before I go any further. You would walk in through the front door, and it was very, very dark in the house because the paneling, it was like a dark brown, almost black in color. So it was always very dark in the house and had a very heavy feel and vibe. And, you know, I've come to learn through experience and now experience as a exorcist deliverance minister that when a demonic presence is there, when we can literally feel that because it's an atmospheric change. The air gets heavy. Sometimes a person's ears will ring. It's like pressure. There are many indicators. And then the smells, you know, the smells of sulfur or rotting flesh or even a feces smell or something like that. I mean, these are all indicators that, you know, there is a demon present. And so just walking in and feeling that vibe from the very beginning, it was just another, I guess, confirmation of how I was feeling and my sister as well. I don't know how my parents were feeling about it. They didn't share that. But you would walk in into the living room and you would make a right down a long hallway, which had a hard tile floor. And oftentimes I can recall laying in bed. My brother and I shared the first room on the right. My parents' room was the second room on the right. My sister's room was across the hallway, the last room on the left. Oftentimes, while laying in bed at night, I would hear footsteps coming down that hallway, and it sounded like, you know, boots or hard-soled shoes coming. It was a hard-tile floor, and it would reverberate off of that paneling, so it was pretty loud. And let me tell you, there were many, many sleepless nights throughout the years, and I can recall also having to pull the covers up over my head as a child because I was so frightened, you know. And then in knowing that a presence was there, every 5 or 10 seconds or whatever, the covers would come back out and then back up because I knew something was there. But my mom was the first to have an experience in the house. It took place when she was unpacking and organizing. My dad had taken us with him for the day to my grandparents, his parents' house, to allow my mother some time to unpack and organize and get things in order in the home. And it was during this that she felt a presence come into the room. She was in the living room. She felt the presence come into the room. She thought in her mind that it was my dad sneaking in to play a joke on her. And she spun around, fully anticipating on seeing him. And to her shock, nothing was there. So she was taken aback and startled and perplexed and all of these things, and just pretty much shaking her head, trying to understand, you know, what had just taken place. And not long after that, my sister's bedroom door slammed shut by itself. And that was enough to make her go out and wait outside until we returned. So that's where it started.
And up until this point, I want to ask the question of what was your family's attitudes towards just the general concept of ghosts or demons or anything of the sort, something supernatural, something paranormal? What were they thinking up until that? Did they believe in that, or what was the thought?
Well, my dad was a man's man. He was a very rugged individual and no nonsense. He had a good heart, very charismatic, and was blessed with every ingredient in life to be highly successful. His story in itself is very sad and tragic, but he did not want to talk about any of that kind of stuff. You didn't do that back in the, you know, decade of the 70s and before that. You just didn't do that. Now, my mother, she tried to downplay it. You know, my dad wouldn't talk about it. My mother tried to downplay it, saying we had a friendly ghost and things of that nature. But I found out that my mother had many paranormal supernatural experiences as a child in her childhood, her and her siblings as well. And they moved around quite a bit as a family. And at one point in her teen years, she actually lived in that very area. So she had pre-exposure to that area and was also, you know, for many, many years having those types of experiences. And so, but again, my dad wouldn't talk about it at all. My mother tried to downplay that, but it gradually escalated.
Yeah.
You know, more of these noises, and there were times that it got to the point to where my mother would make the beds in the morning and would go back and find them all torn apart. Water faucets in the bathroom and the kitchen would turn on with such force that the water would just spill out of the sinks and saturate the areas. Back then, we had you didn't have remote controls. You know, we had a console TV set with you'd have to press a button in and flip a heavy channel selector dial to turn the channel. And there were times that something would just turn that TV on just effortlessly, flip that dial. Again, the smells of feces or rotting flesh or sulfur would manifest out of nowhere. Voices and giggling and chanting and muttering, all these types of things. You name it, Tony, it was going on, but it was a gradual escalation. So it went from that point, you know, the first time with the experience that my mom had, as a pattern. And I feel that, certainly I know this now, that demonic forces grow stronger when people are in fear, because they feed off of the fear. So any type of fear and confusion, negative emotion that is generated by this, those forces become stronger and stronger to the point to where they can become strong enough to where they will launch physical attacks. And that's what was happening. That was the end game for my family and I, especially my mother, that we were being physically attacked by these demonic forces on a regular basis for many years. And my mother suffered more than any other person I've ever seen in my life.
What sort of attacks were taking place in the house that led up to it being the last straw there?
Well, okay, so I'm going to back up again. My sister was the first to have a physical encounter, and that took place in late 1970. And she was asleep in her bed. And she felt someone come into the room and woke her up out of her sleep. She couldn't see anyone or anything there. And she got frightened because she knew something was there. So she was going to get up and get my parents, and something grabbed her leg. And thank God for her, she was able to let out a scream that woke my parents up. They came rushing into her room, turned the light on. Now, they didn't see an entity there, but they did see red marks on her leg where she said something had grabbed her leg. So that's where it started. My sister never felt comfortable again in the house after that. She stated that in the haunting episode. She would end up running away in the middle of the night in 1973 and marrying a young man from the neighborhood. And she stated that she would have married anyone just to get out of there. I mean, it was just that bad, and she never again felt comfortable sleeping or comfortable in the house. So then after that, I was affected the next year, 1971, at the age of five. Same thing like my sister. I'm asleep in my bed, and my bed was closest to the door, to the hallway. My brother's was over near the window. And something woke me from my sleep. I couldn't see anyone or anything there, but I knew something was there, and I got frightened. And I was going to get up and get my parents. And I got out of bed, and as I got out of bed, a tremendous force grabbed me by my shoulders and slammed me back on the bed, pinning my back and shoulders to the bed. You know, Tony, I've given over 2,000 interviews worldwide, and every time I talk about this, it just puts me back in a really, really bad and vulnerable place, that's for sure. I'll never forget it, and I'll never forget what the feeling was like. And again, and I can't accurately describe to you in words how traumatized I was, how frightened. I mean, I felt like my heart was jumping out of my body. I felt like I was going to die right there. And I was held down by this thing. I couldn't move at all. The only thing that seemed to move or work were my eyes. And many terrible things were happening to me, and it felt like it was going on for hours. I'm sure it only lasted maybe for a few minutes, if that. But this all came to screeching halt by the appearance of what I believe to this day to be an angel, a divine being. This lady suddenly appeared at the foot of my bed, and every horrible, wicked, evil thing that was happening to me at that time suddenly stopped. And I felt so much love and peace and comfort and protection from this being that I started to actually calm down. And the most incredible part about that experience, and I had that experience many times over the years of living in the house, was that this angelic being looked exactly like my mother, and I wasn't the only one to see her. She actually assisted my own mother on another occasion. And can you imagine having something like that happen? Number one, that's enough for anybody to say, my goodness, this is so far out of the norm that it's you can't fathom it. But then to have a being, which I do believe was an angel, coming that looks exactly like you. But that's what it was, and my mom and I saw her, and other family members saw her as well, along with these other entities. So there were five entities that we saw over the years in the house, and four were definitely demonic and sinister, and then the one that I just described, I do believe was an angel.
Was there a point where you guys eventually left the home and moved on elsewhere?
Yeah, how do I say this? I'm not trying to sell a book here, but I would hope that people would go back and read Dark Forest, and truly, there's so much, you know, I'm trying to condense.
Sure.
But there's so much that took place, and so many reasons why we stayed and endured that. I mean, it was horrific. And my parents were married in 56. My sister was born in 57. There was another child born in 63 that died under very mysterious circumstances. All I know is that Johns Hopkins came and retrieved the body for studies, and I could never get a straight answer. The accounts varied from family member to family member, but I do know that for sure. And I was born in 66, and my brother was born in 69. And once we got into that house, my parents started having problems. They were social drinkers, because back then, you know, people had parties and all that kind of stuff, and you drank socially with the families and all that. But after getting in there, my dad was coming under attack, and he wasn't sharing this with anybody until he eventually did break down and share it with my mom's mother. And he was having sightings of some sinister-looking entities. He was under attack. He would never share that with anybody until finally the only person he could confide in, or he felt comfortable confiding in, was his mother-in-law, my grandmother. And so I feel that he was affected from the start. And this, in turn, led to him going from a social drinker to a very heavy drinker, to where now he was abusing alcohol. And I believe that, and again, my dad was a great man and had great potential in life, and was blessed with the ability to be able to do anything that he wanted to do and be successful at it. He was a man's man for sure. But I think he was so confounded in his mind, because he was used to being in control of every situation. He suddenly found himself in a situation that he could not control. And I truly believe that by that point, he was trying to escape reality by this heavy drinking. And so the more he engaged in that, of course, that was causing problems between he and my mother. And I'm sorry to say what I'm about to say. He began to physically abuse her on a regular basis between 1973 and 1975. He nearly killed her, Tony, on several occasions. I can recall being 8 years old, having to run out of the house to get the police call on my own dad. You know, these are horrific memories, and I very much hated my dad for a long time for these things and other things that he did. And I'm thankful that I was able to forgive him before his untimely death. He was shot to death in 1987. But he left us in 1975, and unfortunately left us in such a bad way that we didn't have any money. He didn't leave us with anything. And so my mother could not work, because she was very sick. She was very ill. She was suffering with high blood pressure, which led to series of strokes, which ultimately led to kidney failure. So she was very ill the entire time that we lived in the house. And so she was just devastated, you know, mentally, spiritually, and physically. So again, think about this. When you have dynamics like this in a person's life, and a family is going through these types of things, this is absolutely going to fuel and intensify demonic forces, because they're feeding off all of this fear and stress and anxiety and all the garbage, you know, associated with the trauma, everything that is associated with these types of events. And so we got to the point, all of us, that we were so beaten down mentally and spiritually and physically as well, to where I feel that all of us came under demonic oppression at various times. So when my dad left, again, we did not have any money to make a move or anything else. My mother had to go on welfare. That's how bad it was. And she was devastated by that in itself, that she had to reach out for social services. And so we ended up losing the house. The house was auctioned off in the front yard. And the man who bought the house, it was a public auction in the front yard, the man that bought the house was aware of my mother's circumstances and the situation. And he let us stay there on a pay when you can, as you can basis. That's why we stayed and how we were able to stay. My grandmother, my mother's mother, wanted us to come stay with her, but she and my step-grandfather had a one-bedroom apartment. My mother was not going to burden them with us. My mother's sister wanted us to come stay with her, but she had 8 children and a husband. And again, my mother was not going to be a burden. And like I previously stated, you know, as time went by, I feel that we all came under demonic oppression at various times, to the point to where we were almost bound in this awful way to these entities. And so how we stayed there from 1970 to 1980 is beyond me. It wasn't until I went and sat down and wrote my first book, Dark Forest, that I, you know, I had to put myself back into that situation and relive some of those things. It was awful. And I thought, how in the world did we do it? I just don't know how we made it through. But through it all, I know that God had a plan for me, and I think that it was necessary. And boy, if I could go back in time, I'd certainly go back and change when it comes to the suffering of my mother. But I do believe that God had a plan for me, that I had to experience these things in order to be where I'm at right now. So that's how I reconcile it now. I am just heartsick, you know, that my mother suffered in that way, and other family members also, and my dad. You know, I wrote in my latest book, which is called The Connection, you know, I wrote that, you know, he had a victory. You know, God had a victory for him, and he was a winner in life, but he was robbed of his victory. Now, I'm not one to say, oh, the devil made you do this or whatever. We're all free to make our choices. We have free will. But when we make a bad choice, the devil is right there to aid and abet in that choice and amplify and magnify that bad choice into something really, really bad.
Before we move forward and talk about what happened after 1980, I want to get your perspective. And I know you had mentioned earlier that you had some evidence, you had some stories that you found out later on about what may have been the incarnation of these demonic entities in the home, what conjured them up. Now looking back with that knowledge, can you share what you believe, or you don't have to give names or anything, but how do you think this all began with this house, with demonic things infesting it, essentially?
Yeah, again, it goes back to, like I said before, 2 family members. I don't even know who they are. I was told by my uncle that, you know, that these 2 family members many, many years ago conjured up these demonic entities. And once they did that, then, of course, those entities that were invited in, and they came in, and they caused a variety of destruction on the family, really both sides of the family, the Bean family and my mother's maiden name was Harvey. So the Bean and Harvey families were both greatly affected, you know, by these entities that brought all of this evil and curses and hexes and vexes and spells with them. So that's the origins of it, Tony. And then when we got to that house, that area, and I feel that my parents were led to that house in that area by those demonic forces. And it was certainly, perhaps, a way to get my parents and the family there in that type of environment with all those demonic forces at the ready to create total chaos and destruction. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, they're very easily could have been murder committed in that house on several occasions by my dad. I mean, that's how intense and how horrific this became. I mean, there's no exaggeration in this whatsoever. That's how serious this was. And that's what those types of entities do, because the devil hates us, and his agenda is really to kill, rob, and destroy. He hates mankind, so he will send those demonic forces for nothing but destruction.
When you look back, and I don't know what evidence you have of the of the actual Conjuring, of the origin of it, other than, you know, the stories that you've heard? In those stories, did they share, or do you have any knowledge as to what they did specifically to bring about those sort of things? Was it involving, you know, Ouija boards? Was it involving some sort of witchcraft or whatever it may be? What did they do to bring those things about, I guess, is my question.
Yeah, I wish I knew, brother. I don't know. And it was vague. You know, what was told to me was vague in the sense that I don't know exactly how they conjured them. Yeah. Was it a Ouija board? I don't know. It could have been, or through some type of satanic or witchcraft
ritual,
you know, type of ceremony. I don't know.
Okay.
But I do believe it, and I'll tell you why. Because based on my experience currently as a deliverance minister, exorcist, spiritual warrior for God, I understand it, and I understand how these things could come in, and I understand the levels of intensity and when they're invited in, you know, when an invocation takes place, how they can storm in from there. So it certainly makes sense to me now. I'll put it to you that way.
Sure.
I don't know exactly what happened and who did what, how they did it, but I do believe it happened, because to have something like that going on to that level, you better believe something really bad happened and some serious invocation took place to bring something like that in.
Sure. In 1980, when you did end up leaving the house, where were you at? What was your state of mind? Where were you at mentally in life? And what was going on with you?
Well, I'll back up a little bit to 1979, and the first battle that I had with demonic forces took place in 1979, July 1979. I was 13 years old. And I had just returned from Florida. My dad had gone to Florida when he left us, and I hated him for many, many years. My brother loved him unconditionally. And we went for a visit to Florida. And little did I know that this would turn out to be a tremendous blessing in my life. Because while there, even though I didn't want to go because I really didn't want to see my dad, while there I had a very important conversation. Probably the most important conversation I've ever had in my life with somebody was on that day with my Uncle Cliff, who's my dad's older brother. He's still with us. He's in his 80s, and he's a man of God, a very strong faith. And he had a talk with me. He was aware of what was taking place. And he said to me something that was so amazing that my parents believed in God, but we didn't have any faith-based background. We had never had attended church as children. We were never baptized or anything like that. So I didn't know the Bible. But at that point in time, in 1979, my uncle was telling me that we could take power and authority over these things, you know, by the power of God in Jesus' name, and bind and cast them out. And I didn't know anything about this kind of stuff, you know, and he was going on and on and on and telling. I was listening and absorbing everything that he was saying. And I feel that it was really just a defining moment in my life, to where I think God was working through him to kind of plant those seeds with me to assume the role that God was going to have, you know, on my life for the future. You know, I certainly had no idea at that time, but I also had no idea that upon returning home from that trip, that I actually did engage in spiritual warfare for the first time at that young age against those demonic forces, because my mother had been picked up by the back of the neck by an unseen force and thrown through the air. She landed up into her makeup table, and she was cut open, she was scratched, she was bruised. And Tony, let me tell you, after all those years of being a victim, being terrified, being under the thumb of all this garbage for so long, something inside of me snapped. And boy, I came out fighting. And at that point in time, We had had a Catholic priest that was involved for the last 16 months that we lived there. My family and I are not Catholic, but my step-grandfather was, and the church did send a priest out to try and help us. And so the priest was a regular visitor to the house. He had left jars of holy water with us. So I grabbed on that day, after my mom was attacked, I helped her up. Her boyfriend and I helped her back up. I grabbed a jar of holy water and a Bible, and I just became maniacal. I went through that house, and where I made the mistake was I should have been binding and casting them out, but I was demanding that they show themselves. And it was like a scene from a horror film at one point, because the house actually started shaking. And at one point, now, here I am, this young kid that's been a victim, you know, my whole life up until that point. And then five adults were with me, and they were terrified. You know, my mother had just been attacked. And so at one point in the living room, the adults are standing behind me in the dining room, and I was standing in the living room, and just several feet in front of me, four of these entities did appear, and it was just amazing. I could see it right now in my mind as I'm describing it to you. They appeared in like these greenish beams of light, and they just materialized out of this light, and one had the look, we call it the Undertaker. It had a black suit, black hair, black beard, and had chalky white skin, black eyes. And this is one of two entities that were regularly physically attacking my mother. And the second was a male-looking entity that was clean-shaven, long scar down the left side of his face, curly red hair, like close, short kind of curly red hair. And again, this chalky white skin. And then the third entity was a female, long black gown, sharp facial features, long dark hair, very sinister looking thing. And then the fourth, which again was seen on a regular basis in there and by many people, was what I call the dark force entity, which was a black hooded figure with red eyes. And we all saw them clearly for probably 2 to 3 seconds, and then they just dematerialized. They didn't just simply vanish. They just kind of dissipated. They dematerialized. And after that, everything became calm in the house, and then we left and went over. My mother had a new man in her life at that time by the name of Richard, and we went over to his house after that. But so that was 1979. By 1980, I mean, we were just so worn out and worn down. And what had taken place was, I believe it was December of 1980, we woke up one morning to the horrible odor of burning wires. And so we get up, you know, we're looking around. All the electrical appliances, all the major electrical appliances that were plugged in, suddenly burned up. Refrigerators, washer, dryer, all that kind of stuff. Everything that was plugged into the wall or walls, TV sets, they were all burned up. And then my mother found my brother's pet guinea pig dead in the cage. There were a lot of animal deaths and animals going mad and all that kind of stuff also, Tony, over the years that we lived there. So at that point in time, I truly believe that my mother probably said to herself that if we don't get out of here and if we don't stand up and break this now, somebody is going to die. And I do believe that one of us, you know, or several would have ended up dead in that house. Now, unfortunately, we did leave and we ended up moving in with Richard, my mother's really fiance. She was going to marry him. And we moved there, and my brother and I didn't have any paranormal supernatural experiences while at his house. Yet, I didn't know this until a few years ago when I saw Richard. my mother was still having those experiences up until the time of her death. So it wasn't long after moving out of the house that two tragedies occurred. And first, my beloved grandmother, Dora Harvey, died from a sudden series of heart attacks at the age of 64. And 2 months later, my beloved mother, Patricia Bean, died from a cerebral hemorrhage at the age of 44. And these were the two closest people to me in my life, Tony. And they were suddenly gone. And I was absolutely devastated. And I went down a very bad road after that because I was on my own. And I had to quit school in the eighth grade. I lied about my age. I went to work for a construction company. And I grew up very hard and very tough. I grew up on the streets. I used drugs. I drank. I was violent. I was on a road for prison or death. I've been in many life-threatening situations. And it wasn't until I decided to make God first in my life that my whole life changed.
What was that defining point for you where you decided to do that?
I think it was I was getting arrested for assaults and things of that nature, and I was a real outlaw. And I really relished in that my, I guess, rebelliousness and my outlook, because I was very depressed, Tony. I carried that around for so long that I was so dark and empty that I was really living my life on the edge. I was seeking death. I truly was. I wouldn't slip my wrist or take pills. I was hoping somebody would just come up and put a gun to my head and end my life. That's really what I was, that was my mindset back then, and I lived my life on the edge very much so. But then one day, I just had this epiphany that I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was either going to get busy living or I was going to get busy dying. And I decided to reach out to God and say, you know, if you're there, I'll give all of this to you, and I need your help. If you can help me to get through all of these things, then I'm going to make changes in my life, and I will make you first. And it was not a 1-2-3 process, not for me anyway, because I'm a very stubborn individual, and it sometimes takes a wall to fall, you know, for me to move on something. But I prayed that God would take the urges to use drugs and alcohol from me. And I kid you not, he did. I never had any AA or anything, not that there's anything wrong with that, and I encourage people to seek help in that way if they're addicted. But for me, God worked that miracle and took those urges from me, I mean, just instantaneously. And I'm forever grateful. I mean, it's been 30-some years since I've touched any of that garbage, and to me, it's poison. So then, in my life, it was, you know, in the beginning, two steps forward, three steps backward. Because when we make these types of changes, and you know, certainly our mind and our heart are committed to making a change like that, you know, when you're to that point, you want to make a change. However, it's not so easy, because our minds get trained to situations of acceptance. Even back in that house, our mindset was that we were, I guess, trained per se in a way to where we expected those things to happen, and we accepted that as reality. So that became a part of our regular everyday life. So when we get into those types of mindsets and patterns, it's very difficult to break, because even though something great lies ahead and it's unknown, a lot of us won't take that step because we're afraid. We don't want to step into the unknown. We'd rather stay in the familiar place that's the bad place, and we know it's a bad place, but we'll stay there because it's a familiar place, and it becomes comfortable to us. And it's even more distressing for most people to take that gigantic step forward in faith into the unknown to be able to have these great changes. So it took me a while to come to that understanding and having that mindset change, but once I did, I never looked back. And so my life is 50 times more blessed than it's ever been cursed, and I can never thank God and praise God enough for that.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Bill Bean. In part two of our interview, Bill shares with us how he used his dark past to bring light to those being affected by dark forces. He talks with us about how to handle oppression and what people can do to keep negative forces out of their lives, and how he's seen lives changed firsthand. To listen to part two of our interview, become a Gravekeeper through our website at thegravetalks.com or patreon.com/thegravetalks. There you'll have access to every single advanced episode of The Grave Talks, as well as the exclusive part two interview segments that are for Gravekeepers only. It's only $5 a month. Your support helps keep the show on the air. And like I said, in exchange, you get access to episodes months before they're released to the public and exclusive part two interview segments available only to Gravekeeper members. You also get a private RSS feed so you can listen to The Grave Talks on any player that you choose, with every single segment available to you. $5 a month. Go to thegravetalks.com or patreon.com/thegravetalks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.